you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And good morning, everyone. Happy to be here. Happy Veterans Day. And a huge amount of congratulations and thanks to everyone who's ever served. For me, yours truly, a host of 2A Radio. I am very proud to be an American. I am not currently proud of the political state this country is in or where it's been for the last several decades, certainly in my lifetime. But I am very proud of the volunteers who are currently in the military as it is now. Everyone who's serving in the military right now has joined during wartime or rejoined, even the career guys that are in there. It's come past the 8-year commitment from the time that you would sign up. So everybody who's in there has either signed up or recommitted themselves since 9/11. So I'm very proud of everyone who's ever done that. That's a wonderful thing. And we will hit upon some of the things along that line as we continue on throughout today's show. Considering that, we're going to get to just a couple bits of information. John Allen Muhammad, commonly referred to as the DC sniper, which I really don't like that term. John Allen Muhammad was executed last night for the 3 weeks worth of attacks in 2002 that left 10 dead. He and his young accomplice, Lee Boyd Malvo. Now, the reason I don't really care for the calling this guy a sniper is it's been kind of in Hollywood and the press, the lamestream media, that the word sniper is a negative thing. So it's come to the point where people who actually are snipers, they've given themselves a new name in the military and in police as designated marksmen. They don't use sniper hardly anymore. There still are some areas in police and military that use it, but they've changed name to designated marksman because sniper has a poor era about it, poor aura about it. They just, it's been done improperly. This guy was the D.C. area long-range murderer, and that's what he's doing. The guy was hardly a sniper, had no sniper training. He was in the U.S. Army and learned to shoot an M16. So he's shooting people. He and his accomplice Malvo were shooting people with an AR-15. Hardly the proper caliber for sniping anyone. Several people were shot that were not killed, including, and this is amazing to me, including a kid, if I remember right, he was in seventh grade at the time, took a shot to the chest, and the round disrupted ungodly amounts of vital organs in there. But they're able to save this kid's life, which is absolutely fantastic to me, that this kid, this young kid, you know, he's what, in seventh grade, what are you, like about 13 years old, takes a 5.56 millimeter round, a 223, in the chest, right in the chest, and survives. Now, that is huge kudos to the medical community for pulling that off. That is fantastic, and I hope that kid lives a very long, very happy, wonderful life. So anyhow, the D.C. long-range murderer, murderer in charge, was put to death last night. He was executed. So good riddance to that scuzzball. Hope he burns in hell. Just my two cents. We got plenty more coming for you here on the show. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so the Army psychopath suspected of killing 13 people at Fort Hood last week had, quote, more unexplained connections to people being tracked by the FBI, end quote, than just a radical Muslim imam, I think it's pronounced, that the investigators have found out, according to a report that's recently come out. The names of the individuals that this psychopath was in contact with was not revealed by the official source in Congress. Their names and locations will likely emerge soon, according to this report, which was given to Congress, and a portion of it was revealed to ABC News. The mystery over whether the military knew Hassan was communicating with radical Imam Anwar al-Awlaki elapsed into finger-pointing ahead of the congressional investigations looking into the Army psychopath as he was in contact with different extremists. And I think it's interesting that there are congressional hearings, congressional investigations on this. Like Congress is going to be able to do a damn thing about it. Congress, while we were all poised looking at this, in the House of Representatives, Queen Pelosi kept everyone older and then rammed the health care issue down our throats while we were distracted late Saturday night when everyone's supposed to be at home. These people only are supposed to work 3 days a week. If I remember correctly, it is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are really the only days where Congress is actually in session. And, of course, Queen Pelosi, being Speaker of the House, one of the benefits of that is you get to have a small aircraft which will transport you back and forth to your home state, wherever you're from, when you're done with the work week, and then bring you back to work later. Of course, the small aircraft that Queen Pelosi had to stop and refuel on its long trip all the way back to the other coast, back to California. So what happened from there was Queen Pelosi griped enough that the U.S. Air Force, who provides this transportation in the jet, provided her with a Boeing 757 that does not need to get refueled. That is to you and I, the taxpayers. The amount of fuel, $64,000 per round trip, not including any other expenses such as maintenance on the aircraft, just fuel. So we're paying just in fuel over $5 million a year for Queen Pelosi to have a private Air Force 757 cart her ass back and forth across the country. I digress. Okay, the mystery over whether the military, I'm sorry, I already got to that part, even as de facto Muslim President Barack Obama remembered those killed at the Texas Army Post and condemned what he described as the twisted logic that led to this tragedy, federal agencies reacted to conflicting claims about whether a Defense Department terrorism investigator looked into Hassan's contact months ago with Al-Awlaki, an imam who was released from a Yemeni jail last year, has used his personal website to encourage Muslims across the world to kill U.S. troops in Iraq. A military official Tuesday denied knowing Hassan had such contacts. Two government officials, speaking on the condition of anonymity, because they should have kept their pie holes closed, they said that the Washington-based Joint Terrorism Task Force, overseen by the FBI, was notified of communications between Hassan and the imam overseas, and the information was turned over to a Defense Criminal Investigative Service employee assigned to the task force. The communications were gathered by investigators beginning in December 2008, now it's 10 months ago, and continued into early this year, 11 months ago. The defense investigator wrote up an assessment of Hassan after reviewing the communications and the Army Major's personal life, according to these officials. The assessment concluded that Hassan did not merit further investigation. Wow, something slipped through the cracks there. in large part because of his communications with the imam were centered on a research paper about the efforts of combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the investigator determined that Hassan was in fact working on such a paper, according to officials. Pardon me. The disclosure came as questions swirled about whether opportunities were... You know what? This is what it boils down to. It is the same missed ball as when they were allegedly investigating these Muslims that were taking flying lessons. Didn't care about taking off, didn't care about landing. They just wanted to learn how to fly jumbo jets fast, low, and into things. And the FBI heard about it. It did nothing. So yet again, it falls through the cracks. Yet again, Americans are dead at the hands of a radical Islamist that our country was well aware of. Our government, I should say, as incompetent as it is, was well aware of. When the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and it comes to Islamic extremists, Americans die. American Christians are murdered. So thank you yet again for dropping yet another ball, our government. What you're going to want to do now through these congressional hearings, no doubt, is to further restrict our liberties, further restrict our freedoms, so that you can further look into more things and drop more balls in the future and keep us from being able to do anything because we're restricted. Well, kiss me where the sun don't shine on that one. Not I. So, I have gotten on the air and I've described that I have these problems with my computer, and I've had many helpful emails come in and ask me, really, what's going on? Rather than type all that out for all the interested parties that are actually helping me, and thank you very much, here's the deal. I fire up this computer, and as it's booting, I get these vertical lines going from the top to the bottom of the screen. They are not solid lines, but they're nearly solid lines going across with some spacing. There might be like three or four here and two here and five there and three here. And there's, you know, little holes in there, almost like it looks like one of those sheets of music that plays on the automated playing old school type of ragtime piano. You know, the little music sheets that says which key to hit going vertical across the screen. Then I get the blue screen of death giving me some lousy piece of garbage. Bit of information that really does nothing to help. I fixed it before. I fixed the file that it said to. Now that I have redone the whole computer, I've gone through a system restore, and now it's giving me a different blue screen of death. And it will only boot in safe mode. Can't even go to the old configuration. And no sound. Of course, no good video. And it is a HP Pavilion. That is a good size, very nice laptop that is loaded with Windows XP Media Center Edition because it's a Media Center laptop. So there's the information I have. There's been several people, what system are you running? What's it really doing? How's it going? Blah, da, 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 da. So it boots up like it wants to go. It's got all these vertical lines. In different screens, the lines will change in color. Yeah, this screen, they might be in blue. This screen, they might be in red. This screen, you know, they might be in white. Blue screen of death goes back, tells me I can only fire it up in safe mode. So that's what I've got going. Any of you out there who are computer whizzes that might have some good information on how best for me to proceed, because I did a full system restore, which I was told by the jackasses at Hewlett-Packard that is supposed to fix it. It hasn't. I believe it might be the video card. One of the listeners said, you know what, the way those computers go, I believe the video card is part of the motherboard. That'll set you back $5. Of course, the computer's out of warranty. I didn't buy it new. I bought it from a guy who had it for a couple of 2 or 3 months, and he got overextended, so I got it on a pretty reasonable deal. I got a $1,200 laptop for $800. But I need this thing, and I need it up and running. I need it going. So any of you with any help, please email me, bill@2aradio.com. That would be very helpful. Now, I've worked on my widget, on my target stand. As a matter of fact, yesterday I went and I did a private one-on-one tactical shotgun course with the client out of Las Vegas. So I got to actually use my stand for the first time. Now, my buddy Scott, I've told you about, that allows me to use his shop to build these things and such. He and I went out and did some rifle sighting on Sunday, and we used a stand similar to mine that he built, and it worked wonderfully. His is built of heavier tube steel, so it's a very heavy stand, and it worked well. The ones that I used yesterday were actually earlier forms of the prototype. They worked just fine, and that was nice to see. It was nice to see that the prototype itself is working quite well. Today, after the show, I take my steel-built prototype and my aluminum pieces to an aluminum fabricator. He's a fabricator who also does aluminum, to have him build one in aluminum. Hopefully I'll have that in a day or so. And then at the end of the week, I will, if all goes well, spend Friday in Las Vegas and the surrounding area around Henderson going to different fabricators with the prototype and getting bids on this thing. Now, one thing that stinks is I called the SHOT Show to find out if there are any booths available. Not only are there no booths available, there's a waiting list of 60 to 70 different organizations looking to get in ahead of me. So I've got to drop back and punt, either try to sit in with somebody who's already got a booth, if I can find someone, or the option C is just hit the floor and try to go around and try and do essentially cold calls on the people on the floor, which is the least desirable method of doing it, but that might be what I'm relegated to. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio. Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. That's out to all of the military veterans out there. I want to talk a little bit about the Congressional Medal of Honor. Thus far, since 1861, when it was instituted, 3,468 medals have been issued, mostly to military and some civilians. Just a little bit of some information on these. By the way, when we refer to any Congressional Medals of Honor issued posthumously, that means postmortem, after the person who received it, they died, generally in the course of that action, and they received the Medal of Honor afterwards through investigation. In the Civil War, there was a total of 1,522 different awards. And it's interesting, as I go through this, there's different lists for totals. There's the Army, the Navy, the Marines, Air Force, and Coast Guard. Of course, Air Force and Coast Guard don't get any for quite some time as we go through these different incidents. Of those 1,522, 32 were issued posthumously. Then we go into the Indian campaigns, the war with Native Americans. 426 were issued, all of them out of the Army, because that was a local land-based continental war. 13 issued posthumously. Then we move on to the Korean War in 1871, conflict there. 15 were issued, 9 to the Navy, 6 to the Marines, none of them posthumously. So we had the Navy and the Marines over there. I don't even believe that the Army was really involved in that. It was the Navy with the Marine Corps in ground troop format backup. We move on then to the Spanish-American War, where there was 110 CMHs awarded. 31 to the Army, 64 to the Navy, and 15 Marines earned it. Only one posthumously, which was good news. There was also an armed conflict in Samoa, of where 4 CMHs were issued, 1 to the Navy, 3 to Marines. There was the Philippine insurrection, of which 80 Congressional Medals of Honor were issued, 4 posthumously. Then the Philippine Outlaws. That's where they're actually going after terrorists, Muslim terrorists in the Philippines. 6 were awarded there. There was the Boxer Rebellion, of which 59 Medals of Honor were earned. In the Mexican Campaign, 56. 6 more in a campaign in Haiti. The Dominican Republic, right next door, 3 were issued. And World War I. Out of all of World War I, 124 Congressional Medals of Honor. 33 issued posthumously. Then, back in Haiti again, from 1919 to 1920, 2 were awarded to members of the Marine Corps. Then we have a Nicaraguan campaign. 2 more were issued, again, to the Marine Corps. In World War II, 464 Medals of Honor were issued. Now, here's the breakdown. 324 to Army personnel, 57 to Navy, 82 to Marines, and the first and only recipient in the United States Coast Guard, 266, well over half, issued posthumously. In the Korean War, 133 brave American souls were issued the Congressional Medal of Honor. They earned it. 80 to the Army, 7 to the Navy, 42 to Marines, and for the first time to the U.S. Air Force, who earned 4. 95, the vast majority, were issued posthumously. In Vietnam, 246 Congressional Medals of Honor, 154, again, well over half, issued posthumously. In Somalia, 2 were issued, both to Army snipers who went down to protect the Black Hawk that went down. You'll remember the movie Black Hawk Down. In Afghanistan so far, there has been 2. One to an individual in the Army, 1 to a Navy service member, both issued posthumously. In Iraq, 4 have been issued, 2 Army, 1 Navy, 1 Marine, all issued posthumously. There have been 193 non-combat issues, 3 to the Army, 185 to the Navy, 5 to the Marine Corps, 5 of those issued posthumously. A lot of those have to do with disasters going on, several on like aircraft carriers on fire and such. And then there are 9 that are unknown what, when and where, how they earn them, all to the Army. Grand totals, 3,468. 2,403 to Army personnel, 747 to the Navy, 297 Marines, 17 Air Force, and 1 in the United States Coast Guard. 621 of those issued posthumously. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
With Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
I want to bring up, since when I was at Disneyland last month, about a month ago, I, because of some of the people that filled in, I got to start to know a little bit, get familiar with some of the other RBN hosts that I have not been familiar with in the past. And recently, in just the last, I don't know, week or two, I've gotten to have some communication back and forth with R.J. Hinder, the fellow that does the show just before me. Very good show. And I got to tell you, R.J., what a great guy. Just a neat guy. We've only had email conversations back and forth. But what a neat guy. I have so much respect for R.J. I don't want to get into too much about what it is we've discussed. But, you know, he's shared some personal things with me and just different information about some of the goings-on in his life and his history. And I got to tell you, what a neat guy. And very, very good show that he puts on. I don't often get to hear but the last few minutes of it until I go back and hear the archives later in the day or even over the weekend when I catch up a little bit and spot check some of the things. But I got to tell you, I really appreciate RJ sending the show off to me each morning, as well as all of the all of his listeners that stay tuned here. By the way, as soon as I am done, on comes the Global Research Hour, then followed by Ernie Hancock, both excellent shows. So I would like to support those shows by asking the 2A radio audience to give a listen in and listen to the folks over at Global Research Hour, as well as Ernie Hancock coming on after that, and then continuing on throughout the day. A story out of Phoenix, and this is yet another one of these things that happens all the time. A police officer accidentally shot himself in the ankle at the Arizona Law Enforcement Academy Monday morning. It was not a recruit. It was an actual officer that was there doing whatever. Phoenix Police Detective James Holmes said that an officer unintentionally discharged his firearm while the weapon was holstered during training. The bullet grazed his ankle. The officer was transported to a local hospital where he was treated and released. The officer has not been identified, but Holmes said he was not a recruit. Holmes said the incident is being investigated to determine the cause to prevent future episodes. Now, it's interesting that they say in the article, according to this detective Holmes, that the firearm, the weapon was holstered during training. The firearm, that discharged his firearm while the weapon was holstered during training. So they would lead us to believe that the gun is in the holster, all nice and secured, strapped, you know, got all the security devices that cops have on their guns, on the holsters, rather. And somehow, just going about the training day, whatever it was, the gun, on its own, went bang! The round goes down, just narrowly missing his leg, but getting into his ankle. Damn. I hate it when those guns just, on their own, decide to go bang. This is the type of stuff that's got to stop in the media. Guns do not discharge themselves. Faulty ammunition does not discharge on its own. It does not happen. The only time that these guns go bang is when they're being handled by someone. In this case, by human hands. You may remember the story that I read about 3 or 4 months ago where a cop says he's all dressed up, on his way into work, stops off at a buddy's house for coffee. While he's having coffee, his holstered gun goes bang and shoots him in the foot or leg, wherever it hit him. He's just innocently sitting there having coffee, and the gun went bang. Of course, we found out later that that was a complete line of garbage. He had his gun out, yakking with his buddy, showing him something on the gun. As he puts the gun into the holster, he left his finger on the trigger, thus depressing the trigger to the rear, the gun going bang, and shooting the dumbass cop in the leg, ankle, shin, whatever it was, because he didn't know how to keep his finger straight and off of the trigger as he reholstered the gun. These are professionals, folks. This guy was a sergeant. The other thing that bothers me is both of these stories are lies coming out of the mouths of the cops. This detective lied. He discharged his firearm while the weapon was holstered. You can't get to the trigger while it's in the holster. There is not a law enforcement officer in this entire country that would carry a holster that doesn't guard the entire trigger guard and prevent you from touching the trigger. If they do, then the department and the cop themselves have no idea what it is that they're requiring when it comes to guns and holsters. All it takes is a reasonably halfway informed insurance agent for any law enforcement department to say, no. You got to have the holster that covers the trigger and trigger guard. That's all you got to have. That's an industry standard. So the cop that said, I was just sitting here and the gun went off, he lied and it came out later. This detective said, oh, yeah, I'm holstered up. So somebody, either the cop himself who shot himself or this detective, somebody lied to someone else who perpetrated this lie in the media. I am sick to friggin' death of these friggin' law enforcement officers, these cops, federal agents, whoever they are, that lie. I am sick of it. Let me tell you where this comes from. Supreme Court has said, police, law enforcement, however you want to call them, are allowed to lie to suspects to try to get suspects to give them information that they can use to help in an investigation or solve a crime. It stops there. That's the only time cops are allowed to lie, which means everybody in the general public that they come in contact with, including you if you're speeding, they're allowed to lie to, says the Supreme Court. I'm clocked at doing 80. Yeah, there's no friggin' way I was doing 80. The speed limit's 65. I might have hit 72 passing that last car. Can they lie about it? Yeah. Yeah, they can, according to the Supreme Court. Are there policies in some departments that prevent that sort of thing? Yes. So are they breaking the law in that situation? No, but they are violating policy. You see where the difference is. If you, however, lie to anybody under the color of office as they're investigating you, you are committing a crime if you lie. But they can lie all they want. Tyranny. That which is legal for the government but illegal for the citizenry is tyranny, according to Thomas Jefferson. What happens is these cops get so used to lying to the people that they come in contact with, it comes out in everything else. Well, I was allowed to lie to them, so now I may as well lie on this arrest report or lie on this officer's report or lie on this investigative thing. I may as well perjure myself in court. I may as well lie to my superiors. And when the press comes, let's go ahead and lie to them a little bit too. What in the hell ever happened to truth? What ever happened to telling the truth and dealing with the consequences, as opposed to the whole attorney version of tell them your version of the story, and then they've got to prove otherwise? Whatever happened to personal accountability? I'll tell you something that made me sick. There was a case in Las Vegas where this chick, she lived in a town like 90 miles outside of Vegas in Mesquite, right on the Nevada-Arizona border, just as you're heading up to Utah, I-15 north out of Las Vegas, northeast. She lived out in Mesquite but would drive 90 miles into Vegas, be an exotic dancer, topless dancer, and then drive home. So her and her friend are driving this girl's minivan into Vegas, smoking weed, right? They're high. The high girl, who's a driver, I think she's 19 at the time, ends up plowing into a bunch of kids who are doing community services they were sentenced to do so, on the highway picking up trash. Kills like six of these kids. Goes to court, gets convicted, goes to prison. She and her attorney appealed the case because the jury came back and said, because you had this substance in your bloodstream up to this level, we're convicting you. Well, the attorney looked at it and said, you know what, that's not a violation of the law. It's not, the law's not written like that. It's written like this. So therefore, we're going to appeal this case. Okay, that kind of stuff drives me mad. It makes me want to grab that attorney and put his ass in front of a speeding van full of somebody that's high and see if he can survive the impact. The fact of the matter is, this girl, this guy's client, is driving on a highway at 75 miles an hour, smoking weed, plows over and kills six kids. There's a little bit of accountability there. I don't care what the jury came back as saying, whether it's within the law or not. This girl, driving a van, being irresponsible, smoking weed, getting high, loses the idea of where the lane is, plows over six kids and kills them. Done. Go to prison. The little tiny factoids here and there, the little garbage to argue, have some personal accountability, some personal responsibility, and deal with the consequences of what you do in life. We don't ever see that coming out of our elected representatives. Everybody tries to get out of that. I wonder if the president can pardon himself. Is it possible? Could Bill Clinton have pardoned himself? I wonder, maybe he did. Somebody look up the pardons and see if any president has pardoned himself. I know that Ford pardoned Nixon in a process of trying to heal the country and not drag all of the garbage from the Nixon administration out. I found that to be appropriate. That was just me. I found it to be appropriate, at least at that particular point in time. Is it always the right decision? No. At that point in time, the country needed to heal. We're trying to get out of Vietnam. There's a lot of stuff going on. Nixon lied. Nixon was arrogant. Nixon had a hate list. Nixon condoned a burglary. It's nothing like what's happened with other presidents in this country. It's nothing like what Madeleine Albright, Madeleine Halfwit, and Bill Clinton perpetrated with stealing U.S. Air Force jets and personnel, putting UN markings on them, and going to help out in Bosnia/Serbia in that campaign of ethnic cleansing. Why that hasn't been investigated and had these people prosecuted, I don't know. Far, far, far worse than anything that Nixon has done. Far worse than what most people who have had the title of commander-in-chief have ever done. But that was swept under the rug. That's just ignored. But now, you've got de facto Obama looking into things that the previous administration said were okay when it came to the Bush administration CIA investigative techniques, interrogation techniques with the CIA. Now, they want to open that back up. You know something? Tit for tat. Tit for tat. I'm sure there's a lot of garbage the Obama regime has already been covering up, all the garbage that they've done. And I hope someone in the background is standing there with a pen and a sheet of paper ready to fry all of their asses as soon as they are booted out of office. I can only hope that you get what is coming to you, considering you're giving out the same dullage of garbage. As you can tell, I'm a little amped up today. Not real happy with the way things are going. Today is Memorial Day. Today and every day, I salute the troops and the veterans. Today just happens to be the date on the calendar where people get off work to celebrate the same thing. The vast majority of which don't know why they have the day off. They're just, hey, cool. Hump day Wednesday, middle of the week. I only got to work 2 days, have a day off, work two more days. Yee-hoo, it's all good. Why? Why do you have that day off? You have the day off because people who have served in the military have kept this country free thus far, except from the enemies from within who are all in office now, but at least from foreign enemies, to allow you to do things such as vote for stupid people to go into office and get today off of work. Thank a veteran. Continually thank people who are serving in the military as you see them throughout your day, throughout your life. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, National Guard, Coast Guard. Everybody who's in, everyone, has either signed up or re-signed during wartime in Afghanistan and Iraq. Every single one of them. Thank them. You may disagree with Iraq. You may disagree with Afghanistan. I know I've certainly gotten my disagreements in the areas. But I do not disagree with the people who signed up with the right motivation and the right intention to go serve their country and be patriotic about it due to a sense of patriotism. It's called a call to duty. When you have sports figures, when you have business people, when you have people who are educated scientists, whatever it may be, that give up whatever it is they're doing for a higher purpose as they see it, a call to duty to serve their country, and sign up and volunteer to go do that in this all-volunteer military, that deserves all of our respect. Whether or not you agree with any armed conflicts that the U.S. is involved in overseas, or disagree, you should ought to be offering some respect to the individuals that signed up to put their lives on the line, to put their lives on hold, and to serve in the U.S. military. If you don't honor them, you're a coward, and you suck. Just my opinion, one guy talking here. I don't give full agreement to Iraq. I don't give full agreement to Afghanistan. I've got my own opinions on that. And I'm not entirely happy with the way things have been handled. 8 years? 8 years in a dust bowl with people armed with rocks. Of course, they're armed with more than that. And AK-47s. And we haven't had this handled yet. I blame that on the people who are elected officials who are calling the shots in this war, not allowing the military to do what they do. However, today, especially today, if not every day, please call anyone you know who has served and thank them. Post it on your Facebook, shoot off an email. If they're in your household or they're yourself, thank the people in your household. More to come. Stay tuned.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot me.
All right, guys, I think I mentioned I'm going to be going to the Appleseed Project. I believe it's appleseedinfo.org. Just Google Appleseed Project and check it out. They do many of them throughout the country every weekend. I'm going to be doing that this weekend, all day Saturday and at least a portion of Sunday. The same client that I was doing shotgun training with yesterday has some time available on Sunday. He's just not exactly sure when it's going to happen or where. So I may be leaving a little early on Sunday to go do more shotgun training with this client, or I may be there throughout the day. But I will certainly let you know on Monday. Those of you who want to learn, it's very simple, very basic how to use, understand your weapon, sight alignment, sight based trigger control, basic gun handling and marksmanship. Nothing fancy, not this high speed, low drag stuff. Just very simple. The capabilities of a rifle, how to operate your rifle, some of the history involved in operating your rifle. Find the Appleseed Project. It is a two-day event. It's held on weekends in different areas around the country, and it's like $70. You can't beat that. Oftentimes, if you go try to spend a day at a range, it's going to cost you more than $35, and this offers you actually some form of training. I don't know to what level, but if you know very little about rifles, or you'd like to know more, spend the $70 and go take the rifle class. They even say on day one is really learning about the rifle. Day two is where more of the shooting happens. So if you want to on day one to save some money, bring a 22. And then on day two, then you bring the larger caliber, the military version of a rifle, a hunting, whatever it is. And, then actually get some practical application with a real live rifle. So look up the Appleseed Project and check it out. Anything, even having not been there. I've talked to a couple people who have been there. Of course, the people that have quite a bit of training were not impressed. I look at it from a training standpoint. Oftentimes, I go out to different areas to get training and see what's going on in the industry. So I can learn, if I can take even one little thing home in a day or two, And oftentimes, what I take home is what not to do. I see someone else who's training, and their information is reasonable, but the way that they put it across, there's several things not to do. Rubs people the wrong way. It's a poor way to teach, whatever. I take that away. That helps me become a better trainer to make sure that I'm not doing what that guy just did. Go there. Take a look at it. They have these Appleseed projects all over the country. Matter of fact, there's two of them in the state of Nevada just this weekend. One down here in southern Nevada and one in northern Nevada up in Fallon. So look and see what's going on. Check out the Appleseed project if you have an opportunity. Look into it. And if you can, go there and just learn a little bit about the rifle. Have an opportunity to get a little bit of shooting done, understand it a little better, and then you'll be ready to go out there and actually deploy a rifle if need be. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour next.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday. Whoa!